In Play with Pragmatic, made possible by Horton in Britain, a worldwide supplier of engine cooling systems and proud member of the community for more than four decades. HortonWW.com. Welcome to another edition of In Play. I'm Craig Maddock. Today's guest has been a football coach on the high school and the collegiate level. He was a three-sport athlete in high school and had great success as a quarterback at Northern State and a 22-year career as a high school football coach. In fact, he took two different schools to the state championship games. He's also in five different Hall of Fames in South Dakota. The Tyndall, South Dakota native, Mick Weissup. And Mick, welcome to In Play.
Well, Craig, it's a pleasure to be here.
You know, you were a three-sport athlete in high school there in Tyndall, the old Tyndall Panthers.
It was the Panthers at the time.
Yes, yeah. You were in football, basketball, and track. Of course, this would have been the early to mid-60s, and, you know, no playoffs for football at the time.
No playoffs at that time, no.
Tyndall did though, make it to the boys' basketball tournament, that, you know, back in 36. You know, that was well before you. And Yeah, and 1969, after you left. So, I mean, you didn't.
Okay, I remember that one.
You didn't make it to the state tournament, but how close did you make it, though, when you were at Tyndall?
Well, our basketball teams weren't the best, but I think my senior year, we ended up with a record of 19-5, but got beat by a real good Trip team that had Mike Fidel and, I can't remember the other player, but I think it was in the district finals that year and stuff like that. But, you know, we had really, really good track teams back then. I don't know if you remember the name Howard Kaplan, but he was a renowned track coach from way back when. And Tyndall had that sort of rectangular cinder track and the big Tyndall relays at the time where I heard, you know, there were as many as 1,500, 1,600 kids would show up that day in Little Tyndall and have a track meet. But we had some great, great track teams at that time.
Yeah, I miss those old cinder tracks. Why don't we run on cinder anymore, Mick?
Yeah, well, because when you fall, it takes a while to get healed up.
You know, it was Tyndall, and then it was Tyndall-Tabor for a while, and then, of course, the school district became Bonham right there in Tyndall. What area towns were in your conference at the time and had some pretty good rivalries?
Well, we did. Springfield was a big rivalry. We played Avon. Scotland had some good athletic teams and traditions back then. We played Trip. Basketball, we went out. We even played, I think, as far west as Burke. So, you know, those are basically the local ones around there that were the big rivalries at the time.
I'm guessing football was your favorite sport?
Well, it was. I really liked track. I was a pole vaulter and low hurdler in track and stuff like that. I ended up getting second in the state track meet in pole vault when I was a senior. So I really enjoyed that that season and stuff like that. But, yes, football was my favorite.
And I assume you were the quarterback.
I was. And, you know, I didn't really set the world on fire as a high school quarterback or whatever. And in fact, it's sort of an interesting story. Everybody sort of assumed that I would go to Southern since it was, you know, Springfield was 10 miles away. Uh-huh. And it was rather ironic. But the head coach at Southern at the time, which later on became University of South Dakota Springfield, but Jack Martin was the head coach there. And they didn't have a Catholic church in Springfield. And so he came to Tyndall to our church and sat just a few pews away from my family or whatever for many, many years. And I don't know if everybody assumed I was just going to go play football there. I was just sort of a young, naive kid, didn't know much about what was going on there or what the process was. And Jack Neeson was my high school football coach. And he called me into his office one day and he said, you know, Mick, he says, have you thought about playing college football? And I said, well, you know, a little bit. He said, well, I think you could play. And he said, the coaches from Northern, where he was from, played, the coaches from Northern are going to be in Sioux Falls, and they would like to meet you. And I talked to them about it. So my mom and dad and I drove up to Sioux Falls, and we met Coach Clark Swisher at the time. And, you know, he says, well, I don't know. He says, I haven't heard a lot about you. But he says, if Jack Neeson thinks you're going to be a good football player, he says, we'd love to have you. And so I said, well, that sounds good to me. And at that particular point in time, I decided that that's where I was going to go to school.
Well, the great Clark Swisher, of course, the all-time winningest football coach at Northern. And,
yeah,
of course, you gave him a bunch of wins when you were there as the quarterback.
Oh, that was so much fun. In fact, Craig, his last year was my senior year there at Northern and stuff like that. And we had some great teams, and in fact went undefeated that year and went to the NAIA playoffs and stuff like that. So yeah, some really fond memories of those times.
Well, I did notice, Mick, that you threw 35 touchdown passes in your 4 years when you were there.
Really?
You weren't throwing the whole spread offense at Northern as the quarterback.
No,
there.
No. Yeah, and, you know, I wasn't real tall. And so we had to devise a lot of stuff where there were rollouts and play action and stuff like that for me to get the ball across the line. But, yeah, well, rather interesting.
I think you like went 17-2 your last 2 years at Northern. Why was Northern good those last 2 years that you were there?
Oh, Craig, we had such. I mean, that was one of my things. I wasn't anything where I was that outstanding of an athlete or quarterback, but we had such great personnel, and I mean, on the defensive side of the ball and the offensive side of the ball. In fact, offensively, I don't know if you remember a guy by the name of Dick Weary from Falcon, South Dakota. He was 6'1", and he was so quick and had some great hands. In fact, he ended up getting drafted by the Minnesota Vikings. And but, you know, it was just a matter of being surrounded. Oh, I could tell you, you know, like guys like Dave Pashton and Sutton and those kind of guys that just, you know, surrounded by a bunch of great players.
You know, while you were at Northern, was your goal to become a teacher and then eventually coach football? Was that in your mind?
It was. In fact, you know, when I first started, I told everybody I knew what I wanted to do from an early onset. But later on, people said, well, you know, you got to teach or whatever in order to coach. I said, oh, okay. So that's how it works. Yeah.
Well, 1973, your first job out of Northern, you get a job down at Towton County. You're in Mission. So what was that, those first years like for you at Todd County?
Well, it was really interesting. I graduated in the middle of the year, and so there weren't a whole lot of jobs to apply for, and Todd County High School Mission happened to be one of them, and that I qualified for as a teacher, and there was an assistant football coaching position open with it. And the other one was a middle school position, I think, in Huron High School, if I remember right. But anyway, I ended up interviewing at Todd County. And this is rather interesting, but Marlon Goldhammer, who again was the executive secretary of the association for so long, he was the principal at that time. And he was the one that hired me and gave me my first job out of college.
Oh, nice. While you were at Todd County, you eventually became the football coach. I think maybe the last three years you were there.
Yeah.
Were you ready to be a head football coach at that time?
Well, no, not really. But so I went as an assistant that first year. Marv Chihok was the head coach, and he was really, really good, and he knew both sides of the game. You know, I didn't really know too much about the offensive line or defense at that time, and I learned a tremendous amount from him. You know, I was the assistant under him that 1 year, and he came up to me and he says, "You know what? I'm ready to retire." And he says, "I think you can do it." And of course, that was my goal. It came a little bit quicker than what I figured it would happen, but I sort of jumped at the opportunity.
Who did you bounce off ideas from after a day of practice or something, and you're kind of confused or frustrated that there was someone to call?
Yeah, Meyer Weitzman was just unbelievable as far as the amount of knowledge that he had about the game of football. And then he was so good with his relationship with players and stuff like that. So I learned a tremendous amount from him. And then I had another guy by the name of John Stoley, who had graduated from Yankton College, and he was one of my line coaches. And a very knowledgeable guy, and I was very, very fortunate to have him. And then later on, Jim Schleckaway came as the head basketball coach here in Todd County, and he was one of my assistant football coaches. So, you know, surrounded by a lot of good people.
4 years at Todd County, then all of a sudden you decide you want to go to the University of South Dakota. What were your ambitions at that point?
Well, it's sort of funny. I started going to a couple of clinics, coaches clinics at the University of South Dakota. And we actually then had Vermilion High School on our schedule when I was at Todd County. And, you know, I don't know if you remember the Seibel brothers, but they were playing at that time.
And the Kirk
great football player for Vermilion High School.
And,
and so that was sort of my tie there, and that's where I got to meet Beanie Cooper and the rest of the Coyote coaching staff. And I got this phone call from Beanie, and he said, "We've got a graduate assistantship opening up, and would you be interested?" And golly, all of a sudden, after just coaching for 3 years and then having the opportunity to go college, that was really enticing for me, even though the money wasn't, you know, that good at that time or whatever, but it was just an opportunity I couldn't, you know, turn down.
Right. You coached offensive backs 1 year. You did the offensive line 1 year. So what does a successful quarterback at Northern State know about coaching the offensive line?
Oh, well, I tell you know, I was just – that's happened to me a lot in my career, I guess, is I've just been two things, been surrounded by some real good people and just really fortunate to be in the right place at the right time. And Beanie says, well, one of the coaches during my graduate assistant year, one of the coaches decided, Joe Dederman, that he was going to retire from coaching. And Beanie asked me if I wanted to coach the offensive line. And I go, man, are you sure? I said, I don't know anything about this. And he said, well, he says, I just know how you coach and how you teach people. And he says, I really think you can do it. I want you. And I said, well, yeah, without a doubt, I'll do it. And I'll tell you one thing I did do, Craig. I bought a lot of books. And I looked at a lot of film for a couple of months trying to learn as much as I could in a very, very short period of time. And but you know what? I learned very, very fast that in football, especially on the offensive side of the ball, if you don't have things going right up front with those offensive linemen, not many things are going to go right. And it was just a whole lot of fun. And I learned so much about football those few years when I was at the University of South Dakota, just for the fact that you were around and surrounded by football minds, you know, other people that loved the sport and did as much as they could to learn every facet about it. And I mean, that was a great, great experience for me.
Yeah, about 4 years there at USD, but then 1981, by golly, Sturgis needs a football coach out west, and you decided to head out to Sturgis, to the Scoopers. Why did you think about, you know, maybe going back to high school football?
Well, it's sort of funny, you know. If you remember, Beanie Cooper retired as the head football coach and just stayed on as the athletic director, hired Dave Triplett. And Dave, of course, eventually wanted to bring in all his own coaches. So, you know, most of us that were under Beanie were gone within a couple of years. And Chuck Wolski was an attorney from Sturgis, and he heard about me and knew that there was an opening for football at Sturgis, and he called me. And this was like in the middle of July of that summer. I was selling insurance and having a miserable time. Probably one of the most miserable years of my life. But anyway, I was selling insurance, and Chuck, I went down and interviewed for the job, and 2 weeks later bought a house and moved to Sturgis, and bang, bang, all of a sudden I was there in Scooperland.
Well, you had some talent to work with because you go undefeated in the Black Hills Conference, what, three years in a row?
Yeah. You know, and that's like I alluded to before, you know, just sort of walking into a situation that was really unbelievable. They had, you know, been through some turbulent times and hadn't had real good records up to that point, but they had some great athletes coming. And, I mean, I was just in the right place at the right time and sort of lit the fire under them and stuff like that. And just, they had a great 3 years there.
1983, you know, at that time, the South Dakota high school football playoffs were only like 3 years old. And you take Sturgis to the championship game, the 11AA championship. You have to go up against Brookings. The Bobcats won the game 23-8. But what do you remember from that time in that championship game?
Well, I'll tell you, here's what I remember most about that, is we beat Mitchell in the semifinal game to go to the Dome. And one of the things that I, you know, when I interviewed for the job, and one of the things I told our players, one of our goals was to get to the Dome. And Craig, you're going to love this, but we win that game, that semifinal game in Mitchell to go to the Dome. And I mean, we got back to Sturgis and the town and the school are just going crazy. And I mean, we have pep assemblies and all that stuff. And we're just sort of reveling in the fact that we're going to the Dome. And then our coaches, we sort of looked at each other and went, wait a minute, we got another game to play. And so what I learned about that situation was that when you set goals, make sure that they're actually what you want to accomplish in the long run. And we had set a goal of getting to the Dome. We reached it. And so I don't think we were really prepared as a coaching staff or a team to play in that championship game. And, it was a lesson hard learned. I mean, we were 11-0 going into that game, and Don Campbell and Brookings had a great crew also. I mean, they played an outstanding game. We were sort of beat up and stuff, but, you know, that's what I take away from that one.
Hmm. So it's 1984, Mick, and, you know, at that time, you get the football job at Rapid City Stevens. And then overall, you're there 16 years, and kind of curious with high school football, Todd County to Sturgis, and then off to Rapid City Stevens. How much, if anything, did your coaching philosophy change?
Well, I don't know so much as my philosophy changed, but I found, and I soon realized that what you had to do at that level was sort of do the things that those players were capable of doing. I mean, we had such great athletes at Sturgis. It was just a matter of implementing an offensive scheme or a defensive scheme that best showed their capabilities and mm-hmm. just let them go and do it. When I went to Stevens, it was a little bit different just for the fact that they're not – Stevens and those kids are not the old farmer type, strong, hardworking stuff, you know, sure. More of the blue-collar families and that type of thing. And so – And at that time, I really was becoming interested in the passing game and motions and that type of thing. And that really fit with those type of kids. And I think that's what helped. So it wasn't necessarily a philosophy change, but more of an adaption to the kids that you had or the philosophy of the school.
You took Sturgis to the Dome, 1983. Now it's 1987, and you're back in the Dome for the 11AA championship. It's Stevens against Washington, and it was a classic. You had lost to Washington in double overtime before the playoffs even started. You know, really, Washington wasn't even favored to be there in the Dome. But, they beat the number one seed. They beat the number two seed. So what were you thinking when you found out that it was going to be Washington who you were going to face?
It scared the heck out of us because, I mean, they were just huge up front. And they had great offensive and defensive front. And then they had guys like John Legal at quarterback and some running backs that were really running. So multifaceted and stuff like that. I mean, it was a scary situation going into Glenn Selvold is a good friend of mine. And in fact, he lives here in Rapid City, and I run into him every once in a while. And we talk about that game. He still swears the field goal wasn't good, but, you know, I go, well, I don't know what else to say. But anyway, it was a great game. We had, at that time, it was unbelievable, Craig. We didn't have anybody playing both ways at that time. It was just one of the things. We had 64 kids out for football. One of the things that we had talked about right away when I got there was that we wanted them to be involved in other sports. 51 of those 64 kids on that team played other sports. And we had such an abundance of good athletes. And I mean, like I said, we'd had nobody going both ways, which you don't hear about in high school very often, even let alone at that big school level. And but we never had any drop off at any position skill wise either. I mean, they were just that good of a bunch of players. So we knew we were a pretty good football team, and we were really starting to gel and play well towards the end of the season and stuff like that. So I really thought we could move the ball against them a little bit better than what we did, but it ended up being such a defensive struggle in a field position game.
It was.
That it took us a while to get out of the hole and even get into the field goal range.
All right, let's relive that 87 championship game here a little bit. You know, Washington's first drive, they took it all the way down to your 10-yard line.
That's
and then
right.
they missed a 27-yard field goal. Dodged a bullet right out of the chute, Mick.
Right. And then even after they missed that, they were down inside the 10 one other time, and they fumbled the ball, and we ended up recovering it there. So we had dodged a couple of bullets early, and then it was just – there were different circumstances before. We just had, like I said, poor field position. We had a part of our playbook was sort of a wide open, a lot of motions, throwing the ball. Troy Ward was our quarterback, and he was an excellent thrower and stuff like that. And he had Mike Jones, who went on and received as a receiver at the University of Wyoming as a tight end. So we had some people that could run and catch the ball too. And so we knew we were going to be tough. But in that game, we just never had the field position where we could feel comfortable in opening it up. And we ended up going to a 2- and 3-back set and ended up just sort of trying to grind it out to get out of that our own territory. And it was true. It took almost 3/4 or 4/4 of football to get to that position.
Yep, you are absolutely right. In fact, both teams had a couple of turnovers in the game. The stats of the game, whether it was rushing or passing, was almost the same. First downs about the same. So there's 5 minutes left in the game. There's still no score in the game. Washington has to punt the ball. You get the ball on your own 21. And again, there's about 5 minutes to go. Chance for you to keep the ball all the way and score late. What were you thinking on that last drive?
Well, I thought we had to do something to sort of give us some momentum. Everything was just sort of stuck there, and it was really an interesting game. I don't know about how the fans enjoyed it or whatever, but it was really interesting. And you know how you get into those so-called chess matches with other coaches, and that was what it was. And we had finally got the ball out to about the 30 or 35 yard line. And I decided that we had put in this play a couple of weeks before, and we had another quarterback that was backing up Troy Ward by the name of Mike Green. And he was a great thrower. And so we ran this play where Mike sort of rolled out, and then he throws back to Troy Ward, and it ends up being a big play for us.
Huge.
And got us into that field goal position.
Yeah, that halfback pass gets you to the Washington 33, and then you have Tomlinson runs a couple of plays, and you're down to the 13-yard line of Washington. Field goal try with a minute to go. There's no score in this championship game. And you got Sean Cohen as your kicker. I understand, Sean, you kind of had to talk him into coming out for football.
Oh, it's a great story, Craig. we did not have a kicker going into that season. We just didn't have any. And so I had, in a team meeting, asked the players, I said, hey, do any of you have a friend or know of anybody that can kick the ball? And a couple of them right away said, hey, Sean Coleman could do it. And it's sort of funny. So I said, have him come out. I want to talk to him about whether he came out. And I had my back to him the first time he kicked the football. And you know, Craig, that good kicker has that sound when his foot comes off the ball. And I'm not kidding. I turned around and looked. I said, oh, my gosh, you're the one. And what a fitting story or an ending to that story with him kicking that field goal at the end of the game.
How was he during the regular season? How many opportunities did he have?
You know, I do not know right off the top of my head, but I don't think he had missed them. I knew he didn't miss an extra point. And there were a couple of other games where he had kicked some pretty good field goals. You know, he was right 35, 40 yards. And so we knew he was well within his range or whatever. But, and I felt pretty comfortable, actually, when we sent him out and said, field goal try.
Well, from 30 yards out, it cleared the left upright. That head official who is standing behind Cone lifted both arms to say it was good. And with all of the excitement going on, here you are leading by three with a minute to go in the game. Was there chaos on the sidelines at that time because you wanted to get defense ready?
Oh, yeah, there was. But our defense then really rose to the occasion. And, I mean, they never let the Washington guys get a sniff of a first down or whatever. And they really came up big and cemented the game really well at that time. You know, it's rather interesting on that kick. If you talk about the referee at that time was behind the kicker, and he was the one that made the call whether or not it was good or not. And it was shortly after that that they decided to take the two officials and put them underneath the goalposts and have them be able to look right up, straight up the uprights and see if it was inside or not. But, that official, he had a tough time for a few months after that at Sioux Falls. But
my assumption was the rule at the time in high school was that the officials did not go underneath the crossbars or the uprights.
Correct.
If
Correct.
The ball was going to be placed beyond the 25-yard line.
Yeah, I think you might be right. But I think at that time, if I remember right, I don't think they ever went down underneath the goalpost. They were all, you know, I may be wrong on that, but I know it was shortly after that they put them back there all the time.
So, eventually, Washington gives the ball up on downs, only a couple of seconds left, and you just have to take a knee to win the title. You get the Gatorade bath, and you get a couple of players who carry you on their shoulders to midfield to celebrate. What was going through your mind at the time?
Oh, you know, I don't think people realize how hard it is to get there, let alone win the championship. And, you know, after you're in coaching and you're doing something and you have those goals, you talk about it, and then all of a sudden it's realized, you just it's a hard feeling to describe. And the only thing I kept thinking about is I was watching our underclassmen, and I wanted them to suck it in as much as they could, because I was thinking, well, you know, let's come back. Let's keep doing it. You know what I wanted to do? This is funny, Craig, but I wanted to be the O'Gorman of the West. You know, O'Gorman at that time was just one of those powerhouses in high school football all the time, and the ones you sort of feared to play and stuff. And I wanted Stevens to get to be that type of a program. And so that's a lot of that was going through my mind right after the game.
Well, you did have another chance for a state football title. You took Stevens there in 1994 against Yankton, and this was no 3-0 ball game, Mick. Two overtimes, and you unfortunately lose it 34-31, but what was the big difference in that game?
Well, you know, I think back about that game, and it was Max Hawk's last game as a coach at Yankton High School, or as a coach, and Max and I had gone back many, many years and stuff like that. Even back to when I was playing, he was coaching at Scotland and I was at Tyndall. But anyway, you know, a lot of times it's never personal between coaches and stuff like that, but I wanted to win that game. I mean, if there was a game I ever thought about that I wanted to win, that was the one. And, of course, we had Peter Martin, and we were throwing the ball all over the place. We had great receivers and, that type of thing. We were using a lot of motion. We were doing a lot of college-level stuff at that time offensively. And he was still that ground out, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust type of football. And the ironic thing about that game is they score on a pass at the end of the overtime to beat us. And I kept joking about that with him after. I said, "See, Max, you had to throw the ball to beat us." we had a good chuckle about that.
Well, then you left Rapid City Stevens. What were your thoughts when you decided to get out of football?
Well, I wasn't ready to get out of football at that time. And, of course, that's another story in itself. But I did end up going the next year. The Indoor Football League came to Rapid City.
The Black Hills Red Dogs.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was a guy by the name of Jeff Hamilton who I'm not sure where he's from, but played football at Shadron, and he was named the head football coach of the Red Dogs. And he gives me a call and wants to know if I'd be the offensive coordinator for the Indoor Football League team. Well, I told him, "Hey, I'd never seen an indoor game. I didn't know anything about it." And then he said something about, "Well, you can put three guys in motion at one time." And my eyes just sort of got big. I thought, "Oh, my God, that sounds like fun." And so I took the offensive coordinator job. And then a friend of mine, Don Lyon, took the defensive coordinator job with it. And it was sort of funny. I'll never forget that we went to Bismarck to play the first game. And Don and I sort of looked at each other, and neither one of us had any idea what to expect. You know, it was just sort of crazy. But Jeff had done a great job of bringing in some good athletes, and we ended up, I think, 15-1 in the regular season that year and went to the playoffs. And the one thing I learned about Indoor Football League is that you're playing in such confined spaces that that spacing and timing were of the ultimate importance. And so that was a fun time. I really enjoyed that game also.
I know it's been frustrating to follow Rapid City Central and Stevens football recently. You know, they just have not been able to get a good season going recently. You know, everybody is pulling for the Cobblers and the Raiders to turn the programs around. But, you know, what's it going to take? You know, they got a big win during the season this year as Central broke a 29-game win streak.
I had seen Central play earlier in the Rushmore Bowl when they played Spearfish and Central had dominated Spearfish that whole football game and then just made a couple of little mistakes here and there towards the end. And Spearfish ends up scoring with 27 seconds left in the game to beat them. And I really thought that it was so unfair at that time. That was a loss that was probably really hard for the coaching staff at Central to take. But so I was glad to see them finally get the monkey off the back with their win over Washington last week. And the story at Stevens is a little bit different. I don't know if you've heard, but the head coach is gone.
Yep.
And there's been some problems there. And there was a lot of talk about, you know, guys at that gave me calls and said, "Are you ready to come back?" and stuff like that. And I said, "I don't think there's – it's just going to take somebody that's got a tremendous, tremendous amount of energy and a lot of patience."
But all anyway, of us, but all of us across the state are pulling for the Cobblers and the Raiders.
Let them know.
You know, you were the co-founder and the first president of the South Dakota Football Coaches Association.
I was.
What was the reason you got involved with that organization?
Well, it's sort of hard to say. A lot of the other sports, basketball had just started their own association. I think the wrestling coaches had their own association. And one one evening after at the state coaches convention. Virg Pollock from Watertown and I and Jerry Miller from Sioux Falls, we were sitting down and we were having a beer and we started talking. We said, God, why don't we get our own association going? And that's sort of how it happened. And Virg says, well, will you be the first president? I said, well, sure. So that's how that happened.
And how has that helped coaches today all across South Dakota?
Well, tremendous, because first of all, it got all the coaches together. I really loved the clinics that we had at that time, the speakers. I mean, I was one that maybe not everybody's like this, but I was one that went to every clinic that I could. I always went somewhere and learned something new that I thought could benefit my program. And so I think that association was a way to bring coaches in the football a little bit closer together. It gave us a voice to, as far as talking to the association, as far as playoffs were going and that kind of stuff. So it has really meant a lot. One thing that surprises me, Craig, and I don't know if you knew it, but I see the coaches clinic was called off this summer due to a lack of interest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a killer for me. These young guys have got to realize, you know, what the strength in those type of organizations are and what they can do for you overall.
Last one for you here, Mick. I know you're in like five different Hall of Fames, whether it's football and coaches, but you know, what are you most proud of what you did for high school football in South Dakota?
Oh gosh. It's sort of hard to pinpoint one thing, but what I love more than anything right now is when I run into old players we sit and start talking about things that happened during games and practices and trips and stuff like that. But, you know, and of course, the older you get, the better the stories get. But that to me, to be walking down the street or in the mall or something like that, and somebody goes, hey, coach, you know what I mean? It's just that association that you have with those kids and the things that they remember. And I've always told them when I was coaching, I said, you know, do this and have fun, because it is one of the things that you will never, ever forget for the rest of your life. And I said, don't ever regret or have to say, golly, I wish I would have, mm-hmm. you know. And so it's just those type of little things.
In Play with Craig Maddock is made possible by Horton in Britain, where smiling at work happens all the time. Apply now at HortonWW.com. If you like what you're hearing, please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. It helps us gain new listeners. This has been In Play with me, Craig Maddock. This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.